Thank you for tuning in to the WOLA podcast, Latin America Today. It's Tuesday, January 28th, 2014. I'm Adam Isaacson, Senior Associate for Regional Security Policy here at WOLA. I'm here with Jeff Thale, our Program Director. Hello, Jeff.
Hi, nice to be here.
And we're here talking about this Sunday, February 2nd, which in Central America is a big day politically. There are presidential elections in both El Salvador and in Costa Rica, and the polls are showing both to be too close to call right now, with the left expected to make a strong showing in both countries. Who is pitted against whom in El Salvador right now, Jeff?
In El Salvador, there are three candidates. Salvador Sanchez Cerén, the presidential candidate of the FMLN. The FMLN is currently the governing party, although there are a lot of divisions there. The Norman Quijano of the Arena Party, the conservative party that's long been dominant in the country, he's the mayor of San Salvador. And then a third-party candidate, Tony Saca, who was president El Salvador, Arena's president in 2004 to 2009. Funes, yeah. And 2004 to 2009.
Right.
And he's running as an independent and has, in certain ways, divided the right.
So right now, I mean, the polls seem to give a slim advantage, at least in the first round, to the FMLN.
Right. So the FMLN, the polls suggest that the FMLN faces a challenge, which is that the current president, Funes, is very popular.
Right.
But he's not closely associated with the party.
Right. And the party, he was a TV personality.
He was, a TV journalist. And he's left of center, no question. But not closely associated with the party. He had a series of fights with the party. They're closer now, but the candidate who's running is Salvador Sanchez Cerén, was one of the five commanders of the FMLN during the war. And so he's, although of them, he's in some ways maybe got a better image than some of the others, but I think he's viewed as part of the old guard of the FMLN.
He's seen as more of a problem. Doctrinaire, ideological guy.
Yeah, well, I think of the doctrinaire and ideological group, he's maybe the least doctrinaire, but yeah, he's seen as part of the old guard and the people who led the war. And so if you have bad memories of the war and if you want to look forward, not backward, he's not the most attractive candidate. I think that's been his problem. He's done a little better recently, partly because Funes has been more supportive. And actually, President Funes' wife, Vanda Pignato, the first lady, who is Brazilian, actually.
Really?
Has started to campaign for actively for the FMLN ticket, interestingly. So they're doing a little better. The polls suggest they're somewhere between 3 and 4 points ahead of the Arena candidate, maybe up as many as 6 points. But to win in the first round, you need 50%, and they're probably 10 to 15 points from that.
Yeah. So there's almost definitely going to be a second round in a month or two.
It would be – it's not statistically impossible for the FMLN to win if turnout is low and their base is very mobilized. And they have a capacity to mobilize, but it's unlikely. And so then you'll get a runoff in March, and that will almost certainly pit the FMLN directly against Arena without a third party involved.
Mm-hmm.
Hard to imagine that the people who are peeled off from Arena to vote for Saca would turn to voting for the FMLN. Yeah. So they can win. Hard to imagine how it plays out in their favor.
Why is the right of center and the right divided right now? For ideological reasons or for personal
No, it's reasons? Not personal reasons. I mean, Saca has constructed a coalition that's got a center-left and a center-right, small center-left and small
really,
center-right. Connected to it. But it's primarily him and his personal image and his personal prestige. Before he was president, he was a sportscaster. And so he's got just like Funes was elected in part on his strength as a journalist, so was Tony Saca. So in a lot of ways, this is a personal dispute between him and others in Arena. He was marginalized after he lost. His candidate lost badly to the FMLN, and so his group within Arena was marginalized, but for personal and political rather than ideological doctrinal sorts of reasons.
And when Salvadorans go to vote, what's on their minds right now? Is it economics, security?
I mean, the two big issues are crime and the economy. Interestingly, none of the candidates have presented anything strong programs on any of these issues. The FMLN, Funes and the FMLN have advanced a lot of modest but important social programs. So they've done away with the fee for school uniforms. Mm-hmm. They've done away with some fees for public health services. They've established a free lunch program.
But nothing like conditional cash transfers.
No, there's not a conditional cash. There's a small exploratory one, but not a big one. But it's all those kind of programs. Good programs, more populist than structural. But that said, tremendously popular. And Funes' popularity is something like his ratings, approval ratings are something like 70%.
Not very high.
And interestingly, Quijano has said he will continue those programs. So there's no clear economic debate between the two. I mean, historically, certainly one's on the left and one's on the right. One's in favor of a stronger state role and the other in favor of the market. But specifically, there haven't been a lot there. On crime, Quijano has recently said he'll do whatever it takes and militarize security if that's what that's what's needed. But that's a fairly recent, it hasn't been a dividing issue. So while those are the issues, the campaign itself has been kind of lackluster in defining differences between
the candidates. Yeah, they did have their first ever televised debate between the candidates, but yeah, I guess it was shorter on substance.
It was shorter on substance, and it wasn't generally, I mean, we've been having in the United States these debates since 1960.
Right.
And maybe by our standards, if we look back at the Nixon-Kennedy debate, we'd say, oh my God, how boring and lightweight. So this was the first such debate they've had. I think most people saw it as boring and lightweight, and none of the candidates is very either articulate or charismatic.
No. On, going back to security, the big issue since early 2012 has been this truce between the gangs, which did bring a drop in homicides.
Right.
Still sort of a drop in homicides, but the gangs didn't talk about it very much, did they?
No, it's interesting. The truce is not terribly popular among the population as a whole, and it's not terribly popular. Well, I think people are happy to see homicides drop. One, the drop in homicides has more been between and among gang members.
And doesn't affect regular, everyday voters.
Right. And everyday voters are more affected by extortion than by homicide, I think. And there has not been, there's been a drop in extortion, but not as big a one. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people perceive the truce as negotiating with the gangs. And that's not a particularly, I think a lot of people's position is, why don't we just string them up? What are you talking about negotiating with them? So you could overcome that if you thought it was politically necessary by exercising strong presidential leadership. Mm-hmm. But while it's pretty clear that the truce was negotiated by people under the auspices of the Salvadoran government, the president has tried very hard not to keep his distance from it. And so I think it hasn't been an issue. Quijano has said he would not pursue it. And Sanchez Serén has
tried, he would let it
he would let it die. Yes. And Sanchez Serén has been ambivalent about it. But nobody's been able to use it as a, nobody's taken a strong enough position that anybody else has been able to beat them over the head against it.
Right. And so it has managed to actually stay out of the campaign.
It's more or less, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's probably better. I mean, the truce has a lot of problems and a lot of questions and doubts. Better that homicides are down and you figure out what to do about the gangs than that homicides are high, I think.
Right.
And gang war is going on, so.
Well, that's always better, but yeah. Whether there'll be the reforms you need to actually build the institutions you need to.
Right, it's a different
question. The substitute for that is a much different question. It's not clear
absolutely.
If this campaign is settling that question
No. I mean, on security in general, I think, though this hasn't been a public theme, it's pretty clear that the FMLN is likely to bring in, on the police side at least, a pretty good set of institutional reformers. I think, interestingly,
in terms of not in the last government, huh?
They were in the first part of the last government, and then Funes dismissed them and turned to a former general and more hardline people.
So that initial gang would come back.
Many of them, a number of them are still in the police. Mm-hmm. Many of them, if they're not in the police, are in other public institutions. I think they would come back, yeah. I think many of them would come back, and that orientation would come back. And that would be a good thing. Yeah. From the point of view of the institution of public security, that would be a good thing, I think. Yeah.
Well, that's good to know.
Yeah.
turn to Costa Rica, which actually has the lowest homicide rate in Central America and also the least popular president. Laura Chinchilla, who was actually public security minister in the previous government, is just finishing her four-year term with popularity ratings hovering around 30% or even less.
Wow.
That's largely just because I guess there seems to be some political polarization in Costa Rica, right and left. You saw that especially when Oscar Arias was president, and there was a national referendum on whether to ratify the free trade agreement with the United States, which really split people in a way that Costa Ricans really hadn't seen in their politics very much before. And also, crime, while somewhat reduced, violent crime is somewhat reduced from about 2010-2011. The kind of crime that people feel the most, muggings, assaults, right. thefts of your cell phone, even extortion, has continued to increase, even though President Chinchilla instituted some reforms and at least increased the size pretty dramatically of the security forces in Costa Rica. The economy is growing, but actually inequality is growing in a country that has been one of the least unequal in Latin America. And that's got some discontent and unhappiness as well. And her administration, not President Chinchilla herself, but many in her administration have been caught up in corruption scandals. And there have been a lot, even of cabinet ministers resigning under clouds of corruption. And that, Costa Rica has had such scandals in the past, but this to a newer degree. This is after 8 years of the National Liberation Party, the PLN, being in power. This is the party that's been in the power the most since Costa Rica's civil war in 1948. And while people are kind of sick of that political machine, the candidate of that machine is not doing too badly. Johnny Araya was the mayor of San Jose. Not really. I would say not a most distinguished mayor. San Jose has not exactly thrived. A lot of people and businesses have moved to the cities that ring San Jose. But he is a product of the political machine and has a lot of key supporters. He's also running sort of a populist campaign. He is promising, if not conditional cash transfers, almost giveaways to those in Costa Rica who are living in extreme poverty, which is a way to really cash in on that concern with inequality. But he has a challenger. Araya is very unlikely to win in the first round. He has several challengers, actually. The two main ones, and the polls really don't show a clear winner right now, are José María Villalta, who is a leftist from a rather new party called the Broad Front, which they chose the name sort of consciously copying Uruguay to look, left but not too left. And Araya is only 36. He's a member of Congress, a lawyer. Villalta, pardon. Is only 36 years old, which it's scary that people born in 1977 are now viable presidential candidates. But he is promising to move the country leftward, to have a greater state role in the economy, more protection of industry, and more anti-poverty programs. Araya and the other opponent, Otto Guevara, who is from a right libertarian party, and this is his fourth time running for president, both of them have been running ads in a great way since Villalta started showing up in the polls, portraying him as a communist and trying to link him to Hugo Chavez and trying to scare people. The word communist keeps coming up over and over. And Villalta doesn't completely disavow it. But so you've got this three-way race. One poll showed Araya coming within the 40% needed to avoid a runoff, but most polls show everybody in the mid to low 20s, almost within the margin of error. There's really no sense how it's going to go, but chances are if there is a runoff, the right and the center will align against Villalta. But still, it shows that the left is stronger in Costa Rica than it's been, in a country that until very recently just had a sort of a two-party duopoly for really the better part of half a century. That has fallen apart amid discontent with security, with economic distribution, and with corruption.
That's very interesting. Just a quick comment. Well, two comments. One, I think Central America in general, I mean, Honduras is the other case here where all sorts of terrible things to say about it, but the traditional two-party duopoly has been decisively broken, and that's an interesting – even in Honduras, and all of the issues about vote fraud and all that with Libre in Honduras. Nonetheless, they're a real political force in the country, and the two-party monopoly has been broken there, duopoly has been broken. That's an interesting long-term development. The other comment I was going to make, you mentioned that in Costa Rica, the sort of candidates of the center and the right have tried to link Villalta to Chavez and so on. I mean, the flip side of that, or the companion to that, is in El Salvador, the right has tried to link Sanchez Seren to Chavez and to drug trafficking. And they've made that push not only in El Salvador, they've tried to make it in the United States, in Washington in particular, where I think what they'd like to do is see if they couldn't get the State Department to publicly criticize the FMLN candidate and suggest he's soft on drugs.
Yeah, a lot of old neocon figures from the 80s have been crawling out in
Eric
columns.
Elliot Abrams in particular did a piece in the Post and done a number of events and stuff trying to make this argument.
Yeah, and so far, the State Department isn't about to. No, I mean, so often those kind of statements backfire when they're made.
Right, things like that backfire. In this case, interestingly, the week before Elliot Abrams' press conference, 40-some members of Congress signed a letter urging the United States to maintain the policy of neutrality maintained in the last elections. And the U.S. ambassador got the letter, and she said, well, I don't even know why people have gone to the trouble of sending us this letter, because of course we're going to do that. Huh. And so, you know, kind of following this, it'd be almost impossible for people like Abrams to push the administration away from a publicly articulated position like that. So
right. It's interesting, though, because that crowd was much quieter in the last Salvador election.
Yes, they were. But they're clearly worried. I mean, one piece of this is that they're worried here. But, I mean, I think, as you say, the danger they run here is that it causes a backlash and that people, there's a sort of history of U.S. interference and people don't like it. We're trying to move away from it, and this would just move backwards and reinforce that.
So. It certainly happened elsewhere.
Yeah.
And so it'll be interesting to see the results of this weekend's elections. I should also add, I'd be remiss to say that also polling in the double digits in Costa Rica is somebody that a lot of scholars of Latin America know, Luis Guillermo Solis,
who used
to run the Flaxo in Costa Rica and ran the Arias Foundation, is running as a center-left candidate and is not too far behind the leading three, but probably is the polls don't show him likely to make a runoff.
Yeah, I noticed he was running. That's interesting. Yeah.
And there are actually nine more candidates. It's
a big field.
It is a big field. Huh. It'll be interesting, just to see how the voters are thinking in both of those countries. So we'll keep you posted. Thank you for listening to Wola's Latin America Today. And please keep listening. We're up on iTunes. And please keep visiting Wola's website, www.wola.org. If you're finding these podcasts useful, please do consider making a donation to Wola, keeping us going. You can do that right there on the website. You can also find Wola on Facebook or on Twitter at Wola_ORG. Thank you.